Earth, Sky.
I was given a quote last week from a book all about the development of the history of the jet engine. It was a statement from the US National Academy of Sciences in 1940, and it said, "In its present state, the gas turbine could hardly be considered a feasible application to aeroplanes. And a gas turbine seems beyond the realm of possibility with current materials." Now, what was wonderful in this book was that it had an annotation by Frank Whittle, of course, the inventor of the jet engine, who underneath it had written, "Good thing I was too stupid to know this."
You are listening to Martin Haig, and this is Earth Sky's Clear Voices for Science, with a special program in partnership with Shell. When it comes to technology and innovation, no one can predict what the future will bring. Yet it's part of Shell's business to understand what lies ahead for the world's energy future and the technologies needed to get there. Martin Haig, whose background is in mathematics and economics, led the development of what Shell calls its world energy model. That model, in turn, helped form the foundation for the recent Shell energy scenarios to 2050, informed by those scenarios, which are like stories about alternative possible futures. Martin Haig spoke to Earth Sky's Jorge Salazar about energy technologies and choices for our energy future.
Now, what are some of the most exciting energy innovations that you've seen?
What we expect to see is that there'll be a greater variety and mix within the energy system in the future than we've seen in the past. In the past, it's been quite dominated, since industrial times at least, by fossil energy. And we expect that not to go away completely for a very long time. There are some really key advantages, particularly in certain sectors, notably transport, for fossil energy, where we might need it for a long time. But we expect a greater mix. And when you get a greater mix, then you probably find that there are some niches and some applications that have that are better suited for some of the new energy options than others. And we also find that some countries will probably have bigger advantages than others. So the United States has a lot of options available to it, but in a more crowded part of the world like Europe, we might have to look at playing to our strengths, where we use the sun in the Mediterranean and we use the sea off the coast of Britain, for example, for using our own national advantages. The same would apply within parts of the United States as well. There are countries like Japan which have fewer options and they still might need to be importing energy, whilst countries like Brazil probably have more available indigenously. I think we expect to see still quite a globalised energy market. We don't expect things to be done entirely locally. The globalisation trend is a very strong one. A lot of the technologies are helping to link us in so that we can learn more and more together about how these things work. And some of the more ambitious plans even have us importing things like equatorial sunshine via long-distance transmission wires to the north of Europe from North Africa. So if that all works, that'll, again, not be something for tomorrow, and it'll be for the longer term. But that'll be an example of things where we expect to see greater interlinkages across the system and across countries.
How far can new technologies reduce emissions from fossil fuels?
Well, I think there's the obvious answer that all of the new technologies, that all the low CO2 technologies can reduce emissions from fossil fuels. The question I think is worth looking at is in terms of time. So we know that there's an urgency around reducing CO2 emissions from fossil fuels. The ways to do it are obviously renewables, nuclear, and carbon capture and storage. Those are the main solutions that we have on the table available to us. But in the shorter term, there's probably the biggest difference that we can make, certainly for the next decade or more, is substituting coal for gas. If we can do that and manage the bringing in of gas, which is a dilemma we talk about in the Signals and Signposts booklet, then we can make quite a difference to the CO2. Longer term, we've then got to be having all of those other technologies that we have, but they're not available at the scale we need them today.
How does technology innovation, technology development, factor in to being able to do this?
Well, I think the reason that that's easy to do today is because the technologies already exist and you have an industry that is available to do it. You're talking about quite well-established combined cycle gas turbine power stations essentially replacing some of your old coal fleet. However, I think for the longer term, the CCS story then becomes essential. And whilst the gas can makes a big difference and helps your cumulative emissions, which is what matters, for a decade or two, beyond that, you then need the carbon capture and storage coming in. So that's where the new technology angle comes in, and that's where it's going to be absolutely critical that a lot of these programs take place over the next years to test out at scale that it works, that it's got public acceptance, importantly, and that it's economic, both to do gas and coal with CCS.
Right, and carbon capture and storage, that is a field of research that is that still has a ways to go, and it takes time to develop new technologies to become a material contributor to world energy contribution. Therefore, we need to develop the technologies we know today. Where, in your opinion, should we focus?
I mean, that's a very good challenge, because I'm sort of arguing here that we do need a wide suite of technologies in order to solve a lot of the challenges that we face. But I take your point that we can't do everything, so we have to focus our efforts. I mean, I would say that I think there are some key areas on the demand side with bringing in, sort of better vehicle standards, improving our buildings and such like. But on the energy supply side, there are probably some key areas, some of the principal renewable technologies like biofuels, wind and solar, like carbon capture and storage, where we can deploy things that will make a difference over the coming years. And because all of those things, as you say, are going to take time before that they can scale up, we can buy some time in the meantime with trying to substitute some of the most carbon emitting energy out of the system, which of course is the coal. We know that fossil energy dominates our energy system today. And whilst there might be a lot of desires to change it within a few years, we know that because of the very long lead times in changing our energy system, whether it's the heating system in your house or steel mills or power stations or even your car, these things take a very long time. And it's very expensive to actually try and change it very quickly. So for that reason, we know that we have a lot of embedded fossil energy use because of the structure of our energy system and our economy and our society for many years to come. So it's going to be difficult to change that quickly. And because of that, we need to sort of recognise the timeframes of development in some of these alternatives. And that is why then looking for things that buy time, as I sort of call it, can be useful in the intervening years.
What's the most important thing that you want people today to know about future innovations in energy?
Okay, I think probably given the debates that I often hear about the energy transition, I think one of the most important things I think people should recognise is the time that it takes for development. There's a lot of experience that people have from all many other sectors of the economy and many other parts of society where things have changed very quickly. And because of the long lead times in the energy system, a lot of the technologies take a very long time to transition from their early stage to being mature and being wide scale. So I think when people are looking at transitions to a different energy future, the most important thing is to be realistic about how quickly things can change and then recognise that policy needs to be in for the long haul and evolving along that pathway.
You've been listening to Martin Haig, an energy advisor for the Energy Scenarios team at Shell. This program was made possible in part by Shell, encouraging dialogue on the energy challenge. For this and other free science podcasts, visit the subscribe page at earthsky.org. Earth Sky is a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org.